Ms. Esquivel, please go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Appearing as amicus in this matter, Latino Justice by Norma Esquivel. This case is about protecting a Mayan language speaker's right to adequate interpretation during his criminal trial. Courts across New Jersey have repeatedly affirmed this right, not just in its decisional law, but also in its own policies and practices, particularly by readily providing in-person interpretation to non-English speaking defendants for whom interpreters are more readily available. Accordingly, defendants like Mr. Huracan, who speak a less common language, must nevertheless be afforded the same constitutional guarantees that are routinely and readily provided to other non-English speaking defendants. We urge this court to reverse the trial court's order for the following reasons. First, because due process requires adequate interpretation during a criminal trial, and remote interpretation cannot be considered adequate during a criminal trial. And second, the growing population of Mayan language speakers like Mr. Huracan should not be denied constitutional protections because they speak a language for which a local interpreter is harder to find. Turning to my first point, as your honors are already aware, due process and fundamental fairness requires the right of interpretation. And that's because the defendant has a right to meaningfully participate in their own defense and also access and confer with their counsel. I want to quickly circle back to an issue that my learned colleagues raised with regard to the unique spontaneity of criminal trials. One such way that such spontaneity arises is through the process of objections. As your honors know, objections need to be contemporaneous and timely in order for the issue to be preserved for appellate review. Someone like Mr. Huracan, who has the unique objection with regard to interpretation errors, must not be foreclosed from that opportunity, because otherwise they risk foreclosing the opportunity to have interpretation errors reviewed at the appellate level. And that's just one way in which remote interpretation can compromise that very logistical area of a criminal trial. Moreover, as your honors are already aware, the right to interpretation requires adequate interpretation as well. In People v. Vachanka, for example, the Second District held that nothing short of a sworn interpreter at a defendant's elbow will suffice. Similarly, the 11th Circuit held in United States v. Joshi that adequate interpretation requires translation of everything relating to a trial that someone who is conversant in English would hear. That's one way in which this type of setup with remote interpretation that Mr. Huracan would have his due process rights and compromised, and also the fundamental fairness of the trial would be compromised.
Are you arguing that there's a constitutional right to a separate defense interpreter also, so there would have to be two Cochetel interpreters?
No, Your Honor. What we're arguing here is that this court has the opportunity before it to reaffirm what this court has already been doing for other non-English speaking defendants, which is to provide an in-person interpreter so that the defendant can have meaningful access to fundamental fairness and to justice that other non-English speaking defendants have had in this court for years, for decades. Moving forward, Mr. Huracan would essentially be viewing his or experiencing his trial through the use of a tablet that would effectively be subjecting him to a virtual trial. During COVID, this court and this state sought to suspend criminal jury trials, perhaps recognizing the perils and the pitfalls of having a criminal jury trial in a virtual setting. Everyone else in the courtroom with Mr. Huracan would be experiencing a trial, whereas Mr. Huracan would be limited to his own virtual tablet, virtual court, at his own trial, where his rights are at stake. Turning to my second point, Mayan languages also present a unique interpretation problem, making in-person interpretation crucial. And Mayan speakers should not be denied a right to adequate interpretation simply because a local interpreter is harder to find. Our position is that this is not unique to Mayan language speakers. This is something that can impact any speaker of a less common language. Nevertheless, again, New Jersey has the opportunity in this case to affirm the right of Mayan language speakers to have meaningful access to adequate interpretation in the courtroom and to lead the way for other states to ensure protection of speakers of all languages other than English.
Counsel, is there any suggestion that an interpreter was available in New Jersey who was qualified to interpret in this case? And simply it was just harder to find, but efforts were not made?
Your Honor, I'm less familiar with the granular detail regarding whether or not there were Cachiquel interpreters here in New Jersey. But what we do know is that there is a Cachiquel interpreter who was identified in California.
Right. But my because you indicated this, you characterized the issue to be, is there a right to live interpreters, even though an interpreter in New Jersey may be harder to find? My understanding of this is that it wasn't a case of harder to find, it was the case of non-existent.
Understood, Your
Honor.
That's
a limiting principle for this case.
That is a limiting principle, but that doesn't vitiate the need for in-person interpretation. This is merely a presumption, again, that Your Honors have already reaffirmed, which there isn't a presumption of in-person interpretation here, and we're simply asking that it be affirmed. This isn't.
Aren't you asking for more than that? I would suggest that no one here need worry that this court and this judiciary is headed in a direction where we're going to presume remote interpretation or not presume in-person interpretation. The question that a case like this presents is, are there extremely rare situations where there is no interpreter here, where it's a lengthy trial with the dual language problems that exist in this case, are there rare exceptions to the general rule?
I would echo what my colleague, Mr. Godin, said, which is there are certainly the possibilities of idiosyncrasies, but that hasn't happened here. If we look specifically at what is before the court with regard to Mr. Huracan, that's not the situation. The situation is Mr. Huracan, there was an interpreter that was already identified who speaks Cachiquel like Mr. Huracan, and for whom, as we noted in our brief, the match of the language was also sufficient. In other words, Mr. Huracan could understand the interpreter, and the interpreter could understand Mr. Huracan.
In the interest of time, can I ask you to address that question as a friend of the court, without focused on the particular facts here? Are there rare circumstances outside of absolute unavailability that the court might consider in these types of cases?
Of course, there could be idiosyncrasies, and there is a recognition that there could always be a dearth of interpreters for a language that a defendant speaks, a rare language. But again, it's simply to underscore that we're simply asking the court to just reaffirm the presumption, and the presumption be in-person interpretation, with the recognition, of course, that there could be a possible idiosyncrasy, which makes it more difficult to procure an interpreter. So in conclusion, Your Honors.
I'm sorry, when you say the presumption, you're talking about the presumption is this, that interpreters will appear in court.
That's correct, Your Honor. So
there's never been a criminal trial in New Jersey with remote interpretation, has there?
No, Your Honor.
I think the presumption is well established in our state.
And we agree. We agree that it is well established in this state, and we agree that it's also codified in the Language Access Plan. So there are numerous policies and practices that underscore that this is, in fact, a presumption for in-person interpretation. And we simply also want to underscore that given the growing number of Mayan language speakers in the United States today, this will not be the last time that New Jersey will encounter potentially a defendant who speaks another Mayan language or another less common language. So defendants who speak less common languages should nevertheless be afforded the same constitutional guarantees and conditions that other non-English speaking defendants have in this courtroom. So for the foregoing reasons, we urge this court to reverse the trial court's order and grant Mr. Huracan's request for an in-person interpreter.
Can I ask you one more question before you sit down? Can you identify for us some idiosyncratic situations, borrowing your phrase, that would potentially justify the use of a remote interpreter?
In our position, I just, again, want to underscore that there are, of course, many, many concerns with using remote interpretation during a criminal trial. I do, however, want to echo another point that Mr. Godin raised, which is there are some situations in which potential obstacles are beyond the court's control or beyond the control of the interpreter. So, for example, unable to get a visa.
Anything outside of unavailability.
Beyond unavailability, no, Your Honor. There are no other idiosyncrasies that would justify remote interpretation. Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Elson.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. It's the state's position that the trial court here exercised the discretion that was provided in the New Jersey Judiciary's language access plan in addressing defendant's motion with regard to in-person interpretation. As the court is obviously aware, the Administrative Office of the Court, the AOC, engaged in information gathering research, and ultimate, which culminated in their creation of this language access plan, which in 2022 was updated. That is the updated version that was approved by this court. And it's significant to note in Directive 1022, the AOC noted that the pandemic forced widespread use of virtual court proceedings, and in doing so, expedited the transition to video remote interpreting as a standard practice. Contained within that language access plan is standard 1.8, which provides judicial discretion to authorize remote interpreting as the court sees fit in specific instances. The trial court here acted in accordance with what is contained within the language access plan. The state cannot speak to what information or research sort of underpins the language access plan, as we have never been a party to either the creation, the implementation, or the actual use currently by trial courts of the language access plan and organizing interpreters for a specific defendant at any course throughout the different proceedings, be it, you know, from pretrial all the way through trial. So the state stands before you in somewhat of a unique circumstance in that we are a party to the underlying criminal matter, but not necessarily one that is a significant stakeholder in terms of the methodology by which interpreters are obtained and appear. The state would submit that the trial court here did address all of the potential issues, the potential concerns, and ultimately the ruling was appropriate.
Counsel, you're
done.
You're done with your opening statement?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Are you
yes.
done with? If the court does not adopt a per se rule, what factors would appropriately channel the trial judge's discretion such that remote interpreting was the rare exception?
I think among them has to, we do need to address the availability. I believe Justice Patterson raised the example previously of, you know, when this is a rare circumstance. We're dealing with languages that are not necessarily commonly spoken. There may not be a plethora of these particular types of interpreters, either not just within the state, but necessarily within the country, that then sort of prevents their availability to appear physically for a trial. If there are fewer interpreters of that nature, they are, by virtue of the rarity of their sort of specialty, are in higher demand and therefore might not have the same availability. There are other circumstances. I'm sorry?
You agree here that the interpreter was ready, willing, and able to come to New Jersey under the record that we have?
Yes. Yes, that is, yes.
So availability could be...
I would also necessarily...
Sorry, you're just saying...
I'm sorry,
You're just suggesting availability might be an issue in a future case.
Correct. Additionally, I'll point to my circumstance here today where I was physically unable to travel to Trenton to appear before you in person. Situations like that may arise where something comes up in the course of, you know, planning for a trial where there's some sort of issue that renders the interpreter unable to appear. I don't necessarily agree that fiscal circumstances should be the focal point of what is being considered by the court. But there may be a circumstance where it is something that should be viewed sort of in the totality. When you're looking at two different interpreters and one charges, you know, 10 to 20 times what the other does, you know, that may be something that needs to sort of weigh in the balance.
In this particular case, the judge did note on the record that having the interpreter appear remotely would be more cost effective, but there was nothing placed on the record with regard to what that cost would be. In exercising their discretion, shouldn't trial judges, in considering the totality of the circumstances, take into consideration or have enough information to make a determination as to whether the use of remote interpreting would be appropriate in a particular case? And in this case, there was no findings or no information on the record with regard to what the cost would be. And you had the interpreter indicating that he was not comfortable proceeding with remote interpretation virtually. It's something that he had never done before. What aren't those important factors that should be considered when determining whether a trial judge should exercise their discretion and allow for remote interpreting pursuant to the language access plan?
I certainly believe that obviously the interpreter's willingness to appear should be considered.
And not just the circumstances. It wasn't just the willingness to appear here. The interpreter
I understand
was very specific about the fact that he was not comfortable with proceeding in this manner. Should that be considered?
Correct. And going forward, that is definitely something that can and should be considered. As far as fiscal circumstances is concerned, correct. There is no indication in the record what the cost would be. I am not in a position to speak as a representative of the state as to what that particular cost would be. It's not something that I recognize within, you know, it's not within my, within sort of our realm of knowledge. But that may well be something that does need to be addressed on the record by a court in determining whether or not that is something that they are weighing in favor of ruling for remote interpretation.
Question, how Hudson County operates in criminal trials. I assume that there are in the courthouse interpreters on a daily basis for Spanish and some of the very widely spoken languages that residents of Hudson County speak. Am I right about that?
I believe so, yes, Your Honor. I definitely know with regard to Spanish interpreters. I don't know with regard to any other language.
And then if there's a less commonly spoken language, I'm not talking about the situation here, but a less commonly spoken language, are there interpreters who are essentially on call who can be brought in for a particular trial?
I am not aware that again, this is one of the functions that the courts
right.
And the court staff is in charge of. So I'm unaware of the methodology by which they would reach out to someone who's not as common. I don't know if they're...
Yeah, okay, no, that's okay. Don't worry about it. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Godin, rebuttal?
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Very briefly, to answer your question.
Can you speak up, please?
Yes, to answer your question, Your Honor, there are interpreters that are on call that speak other language. Most of the interpreters that we use on a daily basis are Spanish. It's the overwhelming majority. Mm-hmm. We have a number of them. There are also interpreters that speak Portuguese that are there on a daily basis. If we have an individual, for example, that speaks Arabic, I have a couple of clients right now that speak Arabic. We have Arabic interpreters. The court staff has to order them ahead of time, but they come in person most of the time. The same with American Sign Language. I will say when we have the ASL interpreter, their time is particularly important. You know that they're coming. They get precedent. The case gets called first no matter what. So
thank you. That's very helpful.
Yes. The only other thing that I'll say with respect to the Chief Justice's questions about, you know, should the only exception be due to unavailability, my request to this court is that it be yes. However, if there is going to be a different standard, one of practicability that is discussed in the Washington State standard that I cite in my brief, I would just ask that the court consider the procedure that was developed in that statute, which at least requires the court to engage with the individual that's going to be using the language access services and can actually try to ask that person, you know, what problems that they are having with it, so that we're not talking about hypotheticals here. We can actually have the individual who's going to be using the services talk about whether or not it is something that's working for them. The only
at that point, I just have a practical question. How was it determined that your client could understand this interpreter And vice versa.
My understanding is that the interpreters are trained to do that. So
I understand that, but I mean, how was it determined that this specific interpreter was able to be understood adequately by your client? There was a reference to that.
I believe what ends up happening is one of the supervisors from the interpreter unit will sit in with the individual and with the interpreter, and they will basically have a conversation with them, ask them questions with the interpreter, and make sure that the individual is working. That's my understanding of what happened with this case originally, which is the reason why we have a Catchykill interpreter in the first place, was that when defense counsel raised the issue of Mr. Horakan maybe not necessarily being fluent in Spanish, they had a meeting with one of the supervisors with the interpreter's unit, and it was determined by that court officer that he needed a Catchykill interpreter.
Am I correct in understanding the transcript that when you did have the hearing in front of the judge about whether the interpreter would be remote, your client wasn't there, right?
No, he was there.
Oh, he was there. I didn't see a reference in the record. So the client was there.
Physically present in the courtroom.
And was that being interpreted in some fashion to your client?
Yes. So this is all in English, the transcript that we have, but there was on Zoom both a Spanish interpreter and the Catchykill interpreter. So when you read this transcript, it's not immediately apparent, but there was the double relay interpreting happening on the screen.
Remotely?
Yes, and he was watching on the tablet at council table at the time.
Did it have to be, I'm sorry, I thought I saw somewhere that it itself had to be interrupted three times because of technical issues with the remote interpretation, just the hearing about whether it could be remote.
That's correct, Your Honor. It's in the transcript. There were a number of times where usually it's the interpreter saying, my video feed cut or the audio feed cut, or I'm sorry, just a moment, I didn't hear that. That is apparent in this transcript.
And just really quickly, that one thing that hasn't been noted, that the length of this trial, the trial court in that transcript indicated that he believed the trial would be 3 to 4 weeks. And I think that was a consideration of the virtual phase of the trial and also the number of interpreters. I mean, is this a trial that you believe would be 3 to 4 weeks if the interpreters were all in the room?
That, unfortunately, I don't have an answer for. I could probably get an answer for the court if, Your Honor.
No, I was just wondering because I know that that's what was noted.
I also don't know if that is necessarily would include both jury selection and the actual cases in chief, because I know that
you need the interpreter for both.
Right.
I would say that, I mean, I would prefer we have the interpreter for both, but I can see how if we had a virtual hybrid jury selection, I could see the arguments for why it would not necessarily be the case that we would need the interpreter in person for that, although client communication happens during that phase as well. Although I will say that even with virtual hybrid jury selection, it's a little bit easier to sort of shield the reason why things are being delayed because most of the jurors spend 99% of the time in a breakout room waiting for the names to be called anyway. So it's not as apparent to the jurors that the delay is because of the defendant's interpreter. And also I will say that
I wasn't even asking a question. I'm not sure it makes sense to try to select a jury and then have a delay in the trial until you start the evidence because somebody needs to fly in from the West Coast. I think a trial is going to be a trial, and it starts with jury selection, and you'd likely have that person in the courtroom.
I agree, but I just, you know, Your Honor, I will say that generally the practice has been so far, we do the first half, the hybrid virtual portion first, and we usually will tell them, you know, come back next Tuesday. So you can finish the virtual portion of jury selection on a Wednesday or a Thursday, but everybody's not being told to come back until the following Tuesday to come in person for the in-person portion of it anyway. The only other thing that I will say is that, you know, when we talk about this being an extremely rare situation, my concern here is that to the extent that only people that speak rarely spoken languages are going to have to deal with this, there's going to be the Venn diagram of people that speak very rarely spoken languages and people that are part of traditionally marginalized communities is almost a circle. And if we are only going to be subjecting people that speak rarely spoken languages to this virtual interpretation at trial, we, by definition, are almost only going to be subjecting people that are already part of marginalized groups to that same procedure. And to the extent that this is, you know, we can be told, well, it's okay, this is going to be extremely rare, and it's only going to be in the really rare circumstances that we're going to have a virtual interpreter. The only thing that I'll say is that if this is as rare, and if the court is as confident that this is going to happen so infrequently, that then whatever the additional cost is relative to the cost of providing interpreting services to all of the other language speakers, it will also be vanishingly small. And the only reason I say that is because this is something that I did want to say before I sit down, Your Honors, which is that when you read the Language Access Plan, I think you see a lot of pride in the diversity that our state has. I think that it is something that we can all agree is one of our greatest resources. And I think that that sense of pride is well earned, but I think that cases like this is where we earn that pride. And I'm asking that the trial court and appellate division orders be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you to all counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement.